WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross, and it's time for our annual review of the best movies and pop records of the year. Our rock critic Ken Tucker will be here to play tracks from his 10 best list later in the show. First, our film critic John Powers has his roundup of the best movies of the year.
For a variety of reasons, I saw hundreds and hundreds of movies this year, and that the best film I saw this year basically won't play anywhere. And, you know, I can see our audience, you know, beginning to roll its eyes and telling one another, it's time to go to the refrigerator, you know, get a glass of water while the critic talks about this movie that nobody can ever see. And it's so typical of critics that they always like the movie, this obscure little movie. But as it happens, you know, I probably saw, you know, 400 or 500 movies this year. And what I clearly think is the best film is a film from Taiwan called Flowers of Shanghai by a man by the name of Ho Xiao Shen, who for the last 20 years probably has been the best filmmaker in the world. He's little known here. His films are slightly difficult. Foreign films tend not to play very well in the United States anyway, and he makes essentially difficult films, and difficulty being something that is not very easy to market at this point. This is a film about a group of courtesans in Shanghai in the late 19th century, and it's basically about their interactions, how they manipulate their men. It is as refined and beautiful as a Henry James novel or Proust, and that makes it difficult because it actually tells a very complicated and deadly story about how basically women creating their destinies, but in such a subtle way that most people, you know, can't follow it or don't have the attention to follow it. It's a particular sore point of mine because I do think it's the best film I saw out of hundreds of films this year, and it had very few commercial prospects. And in the way the world now works, a film like that will have no commercial prospects unless it gets a good review from the New York Times, which dismissed it as contemptuously as you could dismiss a film. And it was basically as if one had been reading a review of Henry James or Proust by the person who normally reviews Tom Clancy. And so it was, and I think it's actually, you know, valuable for our listeners to know that, you know, if you're not in New York, a lot of what you get to see will be, you know, basically decided on the basis of one review in one newspaper, which is considered the bellwether for the whole country.
It sounds like you just reviewed a critic.
I just reviewed a critic. But what's more terrifying, really, is that in the structure of foreign film distribution now, everything hinges upon one review. And the thing is, I would never want the release of any film contingent upon what I would say about it. But what happens is the thought is, if this film can't even be popular with the New York Times, how can we possibly show it in Detroit or Des Moines or someplace? Because if even New Yorkers don't like it, how can we possibly do this? Which I'm not sure is really good thinking, but that's actually the structure of the way things work. I only bring it up in this particular case because I think this is clearly the best film I saw this year, a film that I think, you know, in 30 years' time will be a sort of legendary great film. And most people in this country will never, ever have a chance to see it.
So, John, have you seen any movies that you consider the best of the year that the rest of us might have seen too?
Oh, yes. Well, actually, I mean, really, I'm not so refined as to only like films that nobody else can see. I think that I've seen a lot of very, very good films this year. You know, some of them are foreign, and I've reviewed them on the show, and I'll just mention them quickly here. You know, there was the Japanese film Fireworks by Takeshi Kitano, and The Eel by Shohei Imamura. There was the Iranian film Taste of Cherry, and then there's a film by Thomas Vinterberg called Celebration, which I think is a very good film. That's a Danish film. Those would be on my top 10 list. Those four films. Of American films, because I think our audience will be more likely to have seen them. I think that I've seen, you know, several good films this year. I mean, I've reviewed once again some of these on the show. I mean, I think Happiness, I think, deserves to be on the 10 best list. I don't love it because I think its vision is so bleak and nasty and dark, but I think it's an extraordinarily good piece of filmmaking. And I guess sort of my favorite American film this year is it's strange to have it be on my 10 best list because it's one of these films that was released in New York and Los Angeles on December 11th for 1 week and won't really open until the 5th of February around the country. And at that time, I'll review it in more detail. But it's my favorite American movie this year. It's a movie called Rushmore by a young guy named Wes Anderson, whose first film was called Bottle Rocket, and was sort of a cult film. And Rushmore, I think, is the most original American movie I've seen this year, in the sense that I didn't know where it was coming from. I didn't know where it was going. And I just couldn't quite figure it out all the way through. And it's a comedy, and it's optimistic, and it's, you know, it has that great American virtue of dealing with serious things in a kind of light way. I can quickly tell you just the story so people will know. It's about a sort of overachieving scholarship kid named Max at a school called the Rushmore Academy, this kind of posh prep school. And he loves this school. You know, it's kind of like his womb. And he's always at risk of being thrown out because he's a terrible student, although a brilliant guy. And he befriends a sort of alienated millionaire played by Bill Murray, in the great Bill Murray performance. You know, probably since Groundhog Day, Bill Murray hasn't been so great, as an alienated Viet Vet millionaire. And what happens is they become sort of soulmates, but then they both fall in love with the same woman, who is a first-grade teacher at the school. And what's wonderful about this movie is that it actually sort of carries you through a kind of Preston Sturges or Ernst Lubitsch kind of like vision of the world, where everybody's creating themselves, everybody has these pains and deep longings, yet it's done at a level of sort of lightness and sophistication and intelligence that I think nothing else this year can touch.
Other top movies of the year?
Yes, well, I mean, I think, you know, one of the films that's now out that I think is one of the top films of the year is the film A Simple Plan, which is, you know, which is a kind of noirish thriller, basically about two brothers played by Bill Paxton and Billy Bob Thornton, who steal some money from a crashed plane, and then gradually greed sort of overtakes their life. It was made by Sam Raimi, who's famous for making kind of wild things like Evil Dead, and here he does a very restrained version of a kind of classic Treasure of the Sierra Madre kind of story about people whose lives are overtaken by greed. It's what I like about this film is that it takes the crime movie as we normally see it and gives it back its human dimension. You know, it's sort of the antithesis of movies that have recently come out, like Very Bad Things, where the whole point of the film is to sort of slaughter people and joke about it. A Simple Plan suggests that crime actually has deep human consequences, and I like that film very much. And I also like the film Affliction, the adaptation of the Russell Banks novel with a great performance by Nick Nolte. And just to mention the other films on the list, I think there are only two left. I think the Neil Jordan film, The Butcher Boy, is a genuinely brilliant film. I think it's one of the, you know, the two or three best English language films this year, and it didn't do anything at the box office. And in fact, what's interesting is as I look down the list of my films, a lot of them didn't do very much at the box office. The last one is Out of Sight, which is the Steven Soderbergh adaptation of Elmore Leonard, which is just a sort of really joyfully good studio movie. And it was a flop at the box office, but was actually a really good film.
So do you want to read them in the order that that they come on your top 10?
Well, I can never quite do it in order. What I would say is that if I had to choose, I will do it sort of like by foreign and American. I would say that if I were ranking them, the best foreign film I saw this year was, aside from The Flowers of Shanghai, it's a film called Fireworks, then The Eel, A Taste of Cherry, and Celebration. Then to get to American films, I'd say Rushmore is first, The Butcher Boy, which is actually Irish, is second, A Simple Plan is third, Affliction is fourth, Out of Sight is fifth, and Happiness is sixth. And I think those would be the 10 films that I've liked the most this year.
Now let's compare that to what you think will be the most officially acclaimed movies of the year.
Yes, well, I think the most officially acclaimed movie of the year is clearly Saving Private Ryan. I think, you know, there'll probably be some acclaim for A Bug's Life as well, because I think it's commercially very successful and people like the animation. And they seem to like it a lot. And probably there'll be films like Stepmom, which do extremely well. I think what's interesting is that I think it's been a very, very good year for American movies. But I think a lot of the films that are very, very good, you know, weren't huge big box office things. And they weren't the kind of things that necessarily will win awards. You know, I was talking to a critic friend about, you know, about what was going to be winning awards. And this may be the most wide open year you know, in recent memory. Nobody's quite sure what's going to win. Saving Private Ryan is clearly the front runner in all sorts of categories, but it's not clear what's second, third, fourth, or fifth. You know, the film Shakespeare in Love could easily become an Oscar nominee. It's a sort of very enjoyable Tom Stoppard script about Shakespeare falling in love in the midst of writer's block and then turning out Romeo and Juliet. It's a very skillful and accomplished film. So films like that could sneak in, but nobody's really sure, except for Saving Private Ryan, what the big films are.
My guest is our film critic, John Powers. We'll talk more about the best movies of the year after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Fresh Air's film critic, John Powers. We're talking about the best films of the year. Any performances of the year that you'd like to single out for praise?
Oh, there's so many performances. I mean, you know, I think one of the wonderful things about being a film critic is that even when you're seeing wretched movies or movies that disappoint you in one way or another, there's always a performance that you can like and enjoy. You know, I mean, because really our experience of movies, I think, is more an experience of moments than a series of, you know, completely achieved brilliant works of art. I mean, just people I would like to mention along the way, and I could mention lots of them. You know, as I think that in actress terms, you know, there's a very good performance in Elizabeth by Cate Blanchett. I think, you know, that at a sort of lower level, Ally Sheedy is extremely good in High Art. You know, I mean, she, as a person who took a beating for years and years as a Brat Pack person, to suddenly appear in this kind of as a kind of strung out photographer and do it so brilliantly is really worth notice. And Hope Davis in Next Stop Wonderland, I think, you know, gives a really, really wonderful performance. The person I want to single out above all of them, I think, is Christina Ricci, who, though just a teenager, may be the most exciting and interesting actress around. She's got a great... She starred in The Opposite of Sex. She was in Buffalo 66. And, you know, basically, she always makes interesting choices and is a kind of dangerous and scary young actress. You know, I mean, I would compare her to Tuesday Weld in a certain way, in the sense that she somehow suggests these kind of edges and kind of razor-sharp bits of danger that most actresses aren't allowed to suggest, and she just brings that to all of her performances. So I think in some ways, this might be the great year of Christina Ricci. So among women, I think those would be who I would emphasize.
And men?
And Manuel, I've mentioned before that I think Nick Nolte gives the best performance of the year in Affliction. I would add that his performance in Thin Red Line is also stupendously good. I mean, I think he hit a period where he was sort of in the wilderness and was maybe making movies he didn't really quite believe in. And over the last couple of years, he's begun, you know, going back to sort of kind of great roles. And he's a genuinely great actor. I mean, he has a kind of primal force that virtually no other actor in Hollywood has. You know, there are other actors who are as good as he is, but he has that incredible force. At the kind of opposite end of refinement is Ian McKellen, gives two very good performances this year, one in Apt Pupil, and one in particular in the film Gods and Monsters, where he plays the British film director James Whale. And it's a performance of incredible complexity and depth. I mean, I wouldn't be at all surprised to see him win the Oscar. It's the kind of film, and he's the kind of actor who tends to win the Oscar. And if I can just mention a couple of other people along the way, I think both Bill Paxton and Billy Bob Thornton in A Simple Plan are extremely good. The young kid from Rushmore, Jason Schwartzman, it's his screen debut, and he carries a film with tremendous panache. And then there's an Irish actor named Brendan Gleeson, who's the star of the John Borman film The General, which is going to be opening around the country soon, and it's a really great performance. One other person I have to mention, just because because perhaps no one has given me more pleasure over the years than him, is that Bill Murray in the film Rushmore gives a kind of rueful, beautiful, touching performance that I'm hoping will win him an Oscar. I mean, I think like lots of people, I've enjoyed Murray for so long, and I'm kind of disappointed sometimes that he's in stuff that doesn't interest me. But when you put him in something good, he rises to the occasion incredibly well. And this is just a really wonderful performance. It's the best male supporting performance. It's really tremendous. And, you know, I would love to be watching television on Oscar night and actually see Bill Murray say what he's going to say when he wins the Oscar.
Yeah, I share your enthusiasm for him, although I haven't seen Rushmore yet. What were the most hyped movies of the year? What did the industry put its money and hype behind?
Well, there are two kinds of film the industry put its money and hype behind. You know, the first kind will be just the big official blockbusters like Godzilla and Armageddon and A Bug's Life, you know, and actually Prince of Egypt. Then there are the slightly higher class ones like Saving Private Ryan and Beloved. And I think we're at an interesting point now where the kind of blockbuster mentality has so overtaken both the studios and the media that there are all sorts of films that you feel are sort of like being force-fed to you. You know, you can sort of like imagine this huge feed tube being put in your mouth. And whether you want it or not, you're simply going to hear endless stuff about Saving Private Ryan or Beloved or Prince of Egypt. That there's somehow you can't avoid it, because when the industry gets behind something and really wants to push it, they then are linked up with the news magazines and Entertainment Tonight, so that no matter where you turn, you're part of this kind of huge complex of people telling you that you ought to see something, that something's important. I think Saving Private Ryan's probably the best example of that, just because we are now expected to believe that this is the official history of what happened at Normandy. And you have all these kind of weird things where, you know, where Tom Hanks is actually being quoted for his opinions on what happened at the Normandy invasion. You know, it's Steven Spielberg's films have this kind of way of sort of becoming these huge cultural artifacts. And what everybody wants to do is the same kind of thing. So that there was that same effort with Beloved, which was to make us think that this is an important film, that we have to see it. This is a real event. There's no escaping it. And the difference is that Saving Private Ryan's a very entertaining film, and Beloved's not an entertaining film. And you see that you can try to force feed films to people, but they don't always accept them. The other fun thing that's interesting in that is that I think there's a kind of resentment that builds up. So I think that people were sick of Beloved before they ever saw it. And that somehow when you do feel that you're being told you ought to see something, that you kind of don't want to, which I think may be one reason why that these kind of low-level slob comedies, like There's Something About Mary or The Waterboy, are so popular, is because they seem to sort of rise from nowhere. Nobody's really telling you that you ought to see them. Nobody's really saying that they're important. So people have that sense of discovering the film for themselves.
The other reason why is lots and lots of teenagers go to the movies.
Oh, yeah, lots and lots of teenagers go to the movies. But if you went to see There's Something About Mary, that was filled with adults laughing.
As
teenagers. Another film that I would mention in this connection is the very enjoyable film about Queen Elizabeth, which I think wasn't on everybody's radar for a long time. You know, so you didn't have to see, you know, countless things about Kate Blanchett when you turn on Entertainment Tonight. And so people have the sense that they're discovering the film. So it's now one of the big surprise hits of the end of the year. I think it probably will get Oscar nominations galore, because it's a film that people felt that they came to rather than having it imposed upon them. I think, to my mind, it sort of all goes back to the hype for the Malcolm X film that Spike Lee made, which I think was the first film I remember where everybody felt they'd seen it 6 months before it was done. You know, you'd already seen the ball cap, you'd seen the T-shirt, you'd read the articles, and by the time the film came out, it seemed like it was sort of like an afterthought. And that's, I think, sort of where we are now, where people are just like sort of forcing things upon you.
Are there any actors this year who you either noticed for the first time or who kind of reached their critical mass for the first time in your viewing of them, that they with this new role, you recognize this person is really talented and you wanted to see more of them?
Yes. Well, I think what happens is that often you have people who are talented who don't quite get the role that will show you their gifts. A good example of that would be Lisa Kudrow in The Opposite of Sex. You know, I think that like a lot of people, I sort of, you know, had seen her on Friends and sort of thought, oh, that's who she is. And then she'd been in a couple films that I hadn't particularly liked. And then suddenly in The Opposite of Sex, where she plays a woman whose gay brother has died, who feels a kind of weird attachment to his ex-lover. She's kind of bitter and yet funny. And, you know, she revealed a kind of both a comic timing and a depth she'd never had before. And I left the theater thinking, good heavens, you know, she's actually really good. You know, and that's actually kind of an exciting feeling to have. When you're seeing someone who you always sort of thought wasn't particularly all that good, and, you know, they're doing really well. The same would be true of Ally Sheedy in the film High Art. You know, I think no one had spent much time thinking that Ally Sheedy could act. And suddenly when you put the person in a role where they can act and they're actually allowed to do what they can do, you know, they're often extremely good. You could even maybe even say that of someone like George Clooney in Out of Sight. You know, I mean, I was amazed the number of people who said to me, I never knew he was any good, you know, because they'd seen him on ER where they'd kind of liked him. But his film roles had been widely considered to be disappointing. But somehow this was the film that captured the particular kind of virile charm that George Clooney has. And suddenly he became a good actor after having been this guy who looked to be just another guy who couldn't make the leap from television to the big screen.
Well, John, I wish you happy holidays.
Well, thank you very much. You too, Terry.
John Powers is Fresh Air's film critic and film critic for Vogue magazine. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.